Chapter 48. An enterprise of such pith required, indeed, less talking than consideration. The first thing they did in carrying it out was to return to the railway station, where Baptista took from her luggage a small trunk of immediate necessaries which she would in any case have required, after missing the boat. That same afternoon they traveled up the line to Trufal. Charles Stowe, as his name was, despite his disdainful indifference to things, was very careful of appearances, and made the journey independently of her, though in the same train. He told her where she could get board, and lodgings in the city, and with merely a distant nod to her of a provisional kind, went off to his own quarters, and to see about the license. On Sunday she saw him in the morning across the nave of the pro-cathedral. In the afternoon they walked together in the fields, where he told her that the license would be ready next day, and would be available the day after, when the ceremony could be performed as early after 8 o'clock as they should choose. His courtship, thus renewed after an interval of 2 years, was as impetuous, violent even, as it was short. The next day came and passed, and the final arrangements were made. Their agreement was to get the ceremony over as soon as they possibly could the next morning, so as to go on to Pen Zephyr at once, and reach that place in time for the boat's departure the same day. It was in obedience to Baptista's earnest request that Stowe consented thus to make the whole journey to Lyonesse by land and water at one heat, and not break it at Pen Zephyr. She seemed to be oppressed with a dread of lingering anywhere, this great first act of disobedience to her parents once accomplished, with the weight on her mind that her home had to be convulsed by the disclosure of it. To face her difficulties over the water immediately as he had created them was, however, a course more desired by Baptista than by her lover, though for once he gave way. The next morning was bright and warm as those which had preceded it. By 6 o'clock it seemed nearly noon, as is often the case in that part of England in the summer season. By 9 they were husband and wife. They packed up and departed by the earliest train after the service, and on the way discussed at length what she should say on meeting her parents, Charlie dictating the turn of each phrase. In her anxiety they had traveled so early that when they reached Pen Zephyr they found there were nearly 2 hours on their hands before the steamer's time of sailing. Baptista was extremely reluctant to be seen promenading the streets of the watering place with her husband till, as above stated, the household at Giant's Town should know the unexpected course of events from her own lips. And it was just possible, if not likely, that some Lyonessian might be prowling about there, or even have come across the sea to look for her. To meet anyone to whom she was known, and to have to reply to awkward questions about the strange young man at her side before her well-framed announcement had been delivered at proper time and place, was a thing she could not contemplate with equanimity. So, instead of looking at the shops and harbor, they went along the coast a little way. The heat of the morning was by this time intense. They clambered up on some cliffs, and while sitting there, looking around at St. Michael's Mount and other objects, Charles said to her that he thought he would run down to the beach at their feet and take just one plunge into the sea. Baptista did not much like the idea of being left alone. It was gloomy, she said. But he assured her he would not be gone more than a quarter of an hour at the outside, and she passively assented. Down he went, disappeared, appeared again, and looked back. Then he again proceeded, and vanished, till, as a small waxen object, she saw him emerge from the nook that had screened him, cross the white fringe of foam, and walk into the undulating mass of blue. Once in the water he seemed less inclined to hurry than before. He remained a long time, and, unable either to appreciate his skill, or criticize his want of it at that distance, she withdrew her eyes from the spot, and gazed at the still outline of St. Michael's now beautifully toned in gray. Her anxiety for the hour of departure, and to cope at once with the approaching incidents that she would have to manipulate as best she could, sent her into a reverie. It was now Tuesday, She would reach home in the evening a very late time, they would say. But, as the delay was a pure accident, they would deem her marriage to Mr. Hedigan tomorrow still practicable. Then Charles would have to be produced from the background. It was a terrible undertaking to think of, and she almost regretted her temerity in wedding so hastily that morning. The rage of her father would be so crushing, the reproaches of her mother so bitter, and perhaps Charles would answer hotly, and perhaps cause estrangement till death. There had obviously been no alarm about her at St. Maria's, or somebody would have sailed across to inquire for her. As he had, in a letter written at the beginning of the week, spoken of the hour at which she intended to leave her country schoolhouse, and from this her friends had probably perceived that by such timing she would run a risk of losing the Saturday boat. As he had missed it, and as a consequence sat here on the shore as Mrs. Charles Stowe. This brought her to the present, and she turned from the outline of St. Michael's Mount, to look about for her husband's form. He was, as far as she could discover, no longer in the sea. Then he was dressing. By moving a few steps she could see where his clothes lay. But Charles was not beside them. Baptista looked back again at the water in bewilderment, as if her senses were the victim of some sleight of hand. Not a speck or spot resembling a man's head or face showed anywhere. By this time she was alarmed, and her alarm intensified, when she perceived a little beyond the scene of her husband's bathing a small area of water, the quality of whose surface differed from that of the surrounding expanse as the coarse vegetation of some foul patch in a mead differs from the fine green of the remainder. Elsewhere it looked flexuous. Here it looked vermiculated and lumpy, and her marine experiences suggested to her in a moment that two currents met and caused a turmoil at this place. She descended as hastily as her trembling limbs would allow. The way down was terribly long, and before reaching the heap of clothes it occurred to her that, after all, it would be best to run first for help. Hastening along in a lateral direction she proceeded inland till she met a man, and soon afterwards two others. To them she exclaimed, "I think a gentleman who was bathing is in some danger. I cannot see him as I could. Will you please run and help him, at once, if you will be so kind?" ... She did not think of turning, to show them the exact spot, indicating it vaguely by the direction of her hand, and still going on her way with the idea of gaining more assistance. When she deemed, in her faintness, that as he had carried the alarm far enough, she faced about, and dragged herself back again. Before reaching the now dreaded spot she met one of the men. "We can see nothing at all, miss," he declared. Having gained the beach, she found the tide in, and no sign of Charlie's clothes. The other men whom he had besought to come had disappeared. It must have been in some other direction, for as he had not met them going away. They, finding nothing, had probably thought her alarm a mere conjecture, and given up the quest. Baptista sank down upon the stones near at hand. Where Charlie had undressed was now sea. There could not be the least doubt that he was drowned, and his body sucked under by the current, while his clothes, lying within high water mark, had probably been carried away by the rising tide. She remained in a stupor for some minutes, till a strange sensation succeeded the aforesaid perceptions, mystifying her intelligence, and leaving her physically almost inert. With his personal disappearance, the last 3 days of her life with him seemed to be swallowed up. Also his image, in her mind's eye, waned curiously, receded far away, grew stranger and stranger, less and less real. Their meeting and marriage had been so sudden, unpremeditated, adventurous, that she could hardly believe that as he had played her part in such a reckless drama. Of all the few hours of her life with Charles, the portion that most insisted in coming back to memory was their fortuitous encounter on the previous Saturday, and those bitter reprimands with which he had begun the attack, as it might be called, which had piqued her to an unexpected consummation. A sort of cruelty, an imperiousness, even in his warmth, had characterized Charles Stowe. As a lover he had ever been a bit of a tyrant, and it might pretty truly have been said that he had stung her into marriage with him at last. Still more alien from her life, did these reflections operate to make him, and then they would be chased away by an interval of passionate weeping and mad regret. Finally, there returned upon the confused mind of the young wife the recollection that she was on her way homeward, and that the packet would sail in 3/4 of an hour. Except the parasol in her hand, all she possessed was at the station awaiting her onward journey. She looked in that direction, and, entering one of those undemonstrative phases so common with her, walked quietly on. At first she made straight for the railway, but suddenly turning she went to a shop, and wrote an anonymous line announcing his death, by drowning to the only person as he had ever heard Charles mention as a relative. Posting this stealthily, and with a fearful look around her, she seemed to acquire a terror of the late events, pursuing her way to the station, as if followed by a specter. When she got to the office she asked for the luggage, that as he had left there on the Saturday as well as the trunk left on the morning just lapsed. All were put in the boat, and she herself followed. Quickly as these things had been done, the whole proceeding, nevertheless, had been almost automatic on Baptista's part, ere she had come to any definite conclusion on her course. Just before the bell rang she heard a conversation on the pier, which removed the last shade of doubt from her mind, if any had existed, that she was Charles Stowe's widow. The sentences were but fragmentary, but she could easily piece them out. A man drowned swam out too far, was a stranger to the place, people in boat, saw him go down, couldn't get there in time. The news was little more definite than this as yet. Though it may as well be stated once for all that the statement was true. Charlie, with the overconfidence of his nature, had ventured out too far for his strength, and succumbed in the absence of assistance, his lifeless body being at that moment suspended in the transparent mid-depths of the bay. His clothes, however, had merely been gently lifted by the rising tide, and floated into a nook hard by, where they lay out of sight of the passers-by till a day or two after. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.